By downloading or listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to Moody's legal terms and conditions found at moodys.com/disclaimer, including that the information provided is not investment or financial advice, and that Moody's will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information.
Hello, and welcome to Emerging Markets Decoded, the podcast that tackles the latest economic and financial trends shaping the world of emerging markets. I'm your host, Ariane Ortiz-Bolin, from Moody's Global Emerging Markets team, coming to you from New York. On today's show, we'll focus on Latin America, host to a diverse range of emerging markets, countries, and corporations. We'll find out how the pandemic and recession has affected corporate liquidity, which, as you know, is a key metric in assessing credit risk, and it's particularly important as companies and projects navigate their way out from recession and into recovery. We'll also do a deep dive into Brazil, the largest economy in Latin America, and discuss the most frequently asked investor questions about the sovereign's credit profile. Recessions can damage incoming cash flow and liquidity, and the liquidity position of any debt issuer is critical in assessing that issuer's capacity to then repay its debt. But despite the very dramatic recession caused by the pandemic, most corporates and public finance projects based in Latin America manage to maintain liquidity levels quite well. We'll find out how they did this and also whether firms in some countries and sectors manage better than those in others. To shine a light on corporate liquidity in Latin America, I'm pleased to welcome to the show Eric Rodriguez from the Corporate Finance Team, joining us from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Ariane, thank you for the invite.
Eric, you and your colleagues recently evaluated the adequacy of liquidity for corporations and public finance projects in five large Latin American economies: Mexico, Argentina, Brazil, Chile, and Peru. Let's start with that, with the broadest summary of your research and its findings. What exactly did you measure? And overall, is corporate liquidity in Latin America getting stronger or is it getting weaker?
So liquidity is adequate in Latin America.
Despite having observed some deterioration because of the pandemic, we believe it will improve in 2021 and 2022.
Our study compares the cash needs for repaying debt and conducting business operations to the available cash sources, including the cash on hand and the free cash flow available for the next 24 months. So depending on the level of coverage that we observe, then we classify the companies as having low, medium, or high risk, and how that changed year over year. So what we observed was that the companies with high liquidity risk remained fairly stable, but we saw a percentage of increase in the companies with medium risk. And that was mainly driven by short-term debt, which was drawn to reinforce cash balances and increased the refinancing risk slightly in 2021. But we will see an improvement when we look, for example, at cash to short-term debt towards the end of the year and into 2022, as many of these companies have already started to address the upcoming maturities while still holding some of the liquidity which was raised during the pandemic.
You paint a reasonably constructive picture of liquidity, despite the fact that recessions caused a big shock to the revenue of most companies. So how did companies manage to protect their liquidity during the pandemic? Did they do something different during this crisis compared to other crises?
This was very broad. The first thing that they did was to reinforce their cash balances. And that was by drawing on the available committed facilities and even by drawing on new bank lines. We also observed the postponement of dividends and a cutback on CapEx. In terms of the operations, many of the companies promoted fixed cost reductions and even a rationalization of capacity. At the worst of the crisis, we observed a reduction in salaries, closing of operating sites, and postponement of certain payments to mitigate cash burn. These actions were in a magnitude unlike anything we have before, but in most cases were enough to keep companies operating through the crisis. We point out here that the operating impact was uneven across sectors, and the services sector was the most affected by the pandemic, especially those cases where consumption on premise is required, such as fuel distribution, certain restaurants, travel and tourism.
And what about projects in public finance? If I'm correct, with only a few exceptions, they were as resilient as corporates. Why? Can you identify what characteristics allowed projects to retain adequate levels of liquidity?
Compared to the corporations, we observed that for projects, the liquidity constraints have been mitigated by cash reserves, and in some cases, a cash sweep mechanism also.
It sounds like being prepared by having committed facilities, postponing dividends or capex, and then being flexible and rationalizing capacity were quite important in managing liquidity. We at Moody's are expecting better GDP growth this year, at least compared to last year, in all of the countries in your study. With this economic recovery, do you think that corporates and projects' liquidity will also improve? Or are there differences among firms and projects depending on the sector that they're in?
Yeah, you see, Ariane, I think there is a broad distinction that we can do here, is that especially what we see is that usually the exporters tended to fare better and benefit from market dynamics, even during the pandemic, while the sectors with a more domestic focus was those that suffered the most. In Latin America, we have a lot of companies which are global leaders in commodities, and they will continue to benefit from foreign exchange advantage in trade and favorable commodity prices because of a restricted supply and sustained demand, especially from China, but also from the economic recovery in the US and in Europe. And this includes oil, iron ore, steel, copper, pulp, protein, soybeans, and sugar, all benefiting Latin American companies. In contrast, the liquidity for service sectors, especially linked to travel and tourism, as we see some companies in passenger airlines and hotels, the liquidity risk for those sectors remains high. These sectors were severely affected by international travel restrictions and a faltering consumer sentiment. In Mexico, for example, the lodging sector was one of the most affected by the pandemic. We should note that even during the pandemic, capital market activity remained strong, and that helped companies in many sectors to refinance their short-term maturities. This includes two of Brazil's largest airlines, which issued cross-border notes in 2021. And even new issuers in retail, fintech, e-commerce, and agriculture, which came to the market since late 2020.
Thank you, Eric. So while I did say that we generally expect a GDP recovery in Latin America, there will be some differences among countries. For instance, in Chile, we expect growth of around 6% this year, following a close to 6% contraction last year. Whereas in Mexico and Argentina, we're also expecting growth of around 5 to 6%. But that is coming from a contraction of 8 to 10%, which means that for these two countries, they won't be growing enough to compensate the lost output from 2020. So we see some differences in terms of the speed and the level of recovery among countries. What about for corporations and projects? Do you think that it matters significantly where these corporations are located, whether their home country?
I think that across the region here, independent of the country, we do see a recovery, and that will help liquidity overall. The reports show that Latin American corporates were able to maintain liquidity in adequate levels, even with the unprecedented turmoil that we observed. We have observed here in the last few years an improvement in liquidity for companies in the region, except for Argentina. I would point out here Mexico, where liquidity will benefit from post-pandemic growth, especially for sectors connected to the United States. In Brazil, the strong government support with cash and checks to individuals and support to small and mid-sized companies helped to mitigate the impact of the pandemic, helping the country's corporate sector to protect their liquidity. And although government support is being gradually removed, the domestic focused businesses will continue to benefit from a recovery economic activity and an advance in vaccination. In Argentina, we see weak local market conditions and also restricted access to international bonds, which coupled with the tight capital controls will add to liquidity risk in 2021 and 2022.
That was quite interesting. Thank you very much, Eric, for sharing the main conclusions of your study with us today. Now, let's turn to Brazil and discuss recent developments in that country. Brazil's economy is rebounding, but the government is facing important political pressure on how it has managed the pandemic in terms of fatality rates and vaccine distribution. We'll discuss whether this could weigh on its ability to implement structural reform in the economy. And in addition to that, inflation has risen, and the central bank has increased its policy rates by 225 basis points in the last 3 months. So fiscal policymakers face an important dilemma. Do they step in to support growth, given that higher monetary policy rates could dampen it? Or do they protect government finances that, with debt and deficits already much higher because of the pandemic, has now become a larger problem? To discuss all of this and what it means for Brazil's sovereign credit profile, I'm pleased to welcome Samar Maciel from the Sovereign Risk Team, joining us from New York. Hi, Samar. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us today.
Hi, Ariane. A pleasure to be with you today.
Great. So to kick things off, how is the pandemic impacting Brazil's near and medium-term growth prospects? What are Moody's current growth forecasts?
We forecast a fairly robust recovery in 2021. Our forecast is for GDP growth of 4.9%, with some upside risk to that forecast, depending on the pace and speed of disseminating the vaccination in the second half of the year. This will, of course, have a positive impact on demand, especially sectors in the services sector, as Eric mentions, and that will help give a more impetus to growth forecast. In the medium term, we expect growth to revert back to Brazil's potential around 2 or 2.5% of GDP starting in 2022 and beyond.
Among EMs, Brazil was one of the countries that deployed the largest fiscal support package in response to the pandemic, at least in terms of GDP, which was almost 9%. What is the impact of this pandemic-related spending on Brazil's fiscal profile?
Sure. We do note that Brazil's fiscal package and stimulus was among the largest in emerging markets. That, of course, helped mitigate the impact of the pandemic and keep the magnitude of the economic contraction relatively moderate compared to other countries, and also is aiding the strong recovery that we discussed for this year. However, it did come at a fiscal cost, and Brazil's debt increased significantly last year. But the interesting point here is that our assessment overall of Brazil's fiscal vulnerability did not change materially. And that's because the key element here is resuming fiscal consolidation and continuing the compliance with the spending ceiling. From, of course, exceptional spending last year, the government did reduce spending significantly this year, and we do expect they will continue on that path to stabilize that burden and begin reducing it gradually over time.
What about monetary policy? Does the monetary policy tightening affect the fiscal dynamics? Does it increase debt servicing, or will it dampen fiscal revenue growth by negatively impacting GDP growth? What's the trade-off there?
We discussed the robust growth, and the fiscal monetary policy normalization is in line with that. As I mentioned, the economic contraction last year was smaller than expected. The recovery this year is fairly robust. So monetary policy normalization in this context is in line with our baseline scenario. Also important to note that this tightening, or I call it policy normalization because it comes from very low interest rate levels in Brazil that were 2% last year. So going to 4.25% this year, even though we do expect maybe continuation of this normalization, it's still below pre-pandemic level. So in that sense, it's not a significant change. And it's important to note that Brazil's interest to revenue expenses came down a lot compared to what they were in 2016. So the gains for the fiscal and the debt dynamics from lower interest rates are still present. And that's a positive, and that did help the dynamics over the past several years.
That's an interesting point you just made, that not all policy rate hikes are the same. The level is quite important as well. And for Brazil watchers, you will all know that structural reform has been on the policy agenda even before the pandemic. Do you see it remaining a priority now? And could the political dissatisfaction around the handling of the pandemic affect the ability of the government to implement reform?
True. I mean, our baseline scenario for Brazil does incorporate a continuation or maintaining the momentum of fiscal and structural reforms. And we did see some measures were passed earlier this year in February and March with the approval of the central bank autonomy law, the constitutional amendment to support compliance with the spending ceiling going forward. And these are key reforms for us, particularly the fiscal one. So in that sense, we do expect policy continuity. We do not see the government reversing or changing policy direction. That said, there is some degree of political noise, and you mentioned the investigation into the handling of the pandemic, but also we're looking at the presidential elections next year, which will likely become more of a focus for policymakers and Congress as it comes closer. So although we expect efforts to continue on the structural reform front, it will possibly be slow or will not fully complete all the reforms that are on the agenda because of the political cycle that we are looking at.
Thank you so much, Samar, for being with us today. And with that, we conclude this edition of Emerging Markets Decoded. For those interested in keeping up to speed with our latest views across all the emerging markets, you can visit our dedicated Emerging Markets Hub for the very latest research, podcasts, and interactive webinars at em.moodys.io. And finally, you can now also subscribe to Moody's Talks Emerging Markets Decoded on your favorite podcast channels, including Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts. Please do share with us your reviews, comments, and suggestions for future episodes. Until next time, stay safe and thank you for joining us.